You're listening to the Trekmate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
War, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Aye, sir.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast, where we discuss everything about Star Trek The Next Generation. And tonight's episode is Season 2. The whole Season 2. 22 episodes, 21 of which are worth talking about. And this will be our Season 2 wrap-up. I'm Lou from Omaha, Nebraska.
And I'm James from London.
And tonight's synopsis is Star Trek puts out a second season, but should have stopped at 21. Let's see. Tonight's episode is written by Lou and James. It's directed by Lou. Guest stars include... Well,
we have no guest stars today.
Well, we do have, starting with Seymour Castle as Hester Delt. And then we end up, as I look through here, there was no guest for the... Well, it says guest stars Call Meany for Shades of Grey, but I'd have to say the real ending was peak performance, so I'll say Ray Brock-Smith as Sirna Kaurami, all the way down to a tactician. What is that? Tactical guy? Tactician?
A tactician. Yeah, a tactical... A dude doing tactical stuff is a tactician.
Tactician. Okay. So some of the things that you could expect to hear from us. And James, did you give my little written, handwritten thing of the best and worst of?
I did. I actually did get this handwritten note sent over the internet. Yeah.
All right. And you were able to read it?
I was.
Amazing. So here's some of the things that I came up with. And James always can add or delete what he likes or doesn't. We'll do the best of season two overall, what we think of it overall. The best plot lines and the worst plot lines. What we think of the best episodes. Who we think really shined this season. Does this sound like Gamma Quadrant? Yes, it is. This is basically where I got it from. I'm not going to lie. I listened to the Gamma Quadrant and heard Seth Barker, Ryan Reinert, and Valerie Loveland do just about the same things. And I said, that's perfect. So if imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, those guys ought to be blushing right now. But I did say, you know, do we have anything about technology? And I had a little difficult time coming up with stuff. And then we're going to go into the number of each rating we gave. So how many ones, twos, threes, fours, and fives. An average for the season. And then I want to also put in the average of the series to date. Let's talk about some of the podcast guests who were on the show. The forum, you know, some of the posts that we received on the forum, who are those forum people that we really want to thank for being part of the family. I don't know, you know, what do we expect for season three? Maybe a little bit about us, what we're doing lately, and when will season three begin? That's a very tricky question because I've changed it three times in the last week and a half.
Actually, Lou, I was very pleased to receive your email. I think it was yesterday or the day before, which basically stated, season three, everything you know so far is wrong. This is the new schedule.
Yes, it was. And guess what? Blair actually sent me an email. Thank you, Blair, for that, because that's even feedback on the schedule, because our last two shows were going to be recorded on December 26th, which is apparently Boxing Day.
It is Boxing Day.
You know,
do they have Boxing Day in Canada as well?
I think so. They're under the same rule, but not here in the States. I really, honestly, I looked up Boxing Day, and it's just a day celebrated after Christmas, but I don't really know what it is. Is it a religious holiday? Or?
No, it's not a religious holiday. So in England and, you know, perhaps other post-colonial parts of the empire, I assume in Canada they also have that. So, but Boxing Day is just it's a bank holiday on the day after Christmas. So instead of having one day off for Christmas, we have two. We have the 25th and the 26th.
Oh, I thought maybe I would have to reschedule that because I'd be taking them away from church or something.
No, I don't think there's any church on Boxing Day, but I may be wrong.
Oh, well, Blair, let me know. Okay. So, season two.
But it is a time to spend with your family, by the way. Just in case that Blair doesn't want to come on a podcast for Boxing Day or whatever it would have been. It's perfectly legitimate for you to be with your family and your other loved ones and not be recording a podcast.
Okay. Well, that's fine. I mean, I went to season three and I figured that we'll just go at January 2nd. Unless, of course, Blair, you're hungover from New Year's. I don't know. So just let me know if that works. But you know something? I'll tell you, like I said before, this nothing here is set in stone. You never know what can happen and things can change. So all I need is somebody that works my job on the weekends to quit, and then next thing you know, I'm going back to overtime training the next person to do the job. So that's difficult sometimes. Okay, so overall season two. Obviously, I believe season two. Some people say season two is actually worse than season one, and I'm not sure how. I think season two was better. Certainly shows in the ratings. What about you?
Actually, I'm one of the people that that would argue, or in the past would have argued, that season two is worse than season one. I think that season one is very rough. I think that there are certain things on season one that are kind of nice. I like, you know, there are various bits on season one which are good. In my mind, in particular, like Where No One Has Gone Before and Conspiracy are good, you know, really good shows and so on. I think the problem with season two is that I think some of the poorer episodes can't be described as simply, you know, them finding their feet. So whereas in the season one, you can kind of chalk things like, you know, Angel One or Code of Honor up to the fact that, look, they didn't have any people, they didn't have any time or whatever. Things like, you know, Up the Long Ladder and the Dauphin and stuff like that in season two just look a little bit out of place. However, let me just correct myself. Having actually gone through season two over the last couple of weeks and, you know, rewatched it and looked at it, I actually think it there's no question that it's better than season one. And in particular, I think that the performances from the crew are better. I think people have fallen into their roles as they have grown throughout the season. I also think the writing is a lot stronger as well. And in particular, you now see episodes that have, you know, the A and the B storyline there. It's not just, you know, idea of the week, go to the planet of the X and learn why. So there's a lot more sophisticated writing going on. And I think that you can see that, you know, not necessarily on just the big shows like A Measure of Man or Q Who or something, but I think even on some of the more minor shows, I think that their ambition is certainly a lot greater this season.
Okay. Well, to refresh everyone for season one, James, you had two fives. And do you want to guess at which ones those were, if you remember?
Yeah, I'm certain that would have been Where No One Has Gone Before and Conspiracy.
Conspiracy, yes. I had zero fives for season one. The highest one was 4.5. Going to Conspiracy, and four going to Where No One Has Gone Before. I had a couple other fours. Our guests was Colin, who gave Conspiracy a five, and we had 4.5. Well, actually, it was an average. Mark was a four, and Paul was a five for Where No One Has Gone Before. So that averaged out to 4.5. Season two plot lines compared to season one. Well, there's no, I don't know. There's no home soil. Angel One. What do you think? Well, when we say plot lines, that would seem to suggest like a story arc that DS9 was famous for. I don't really see that, do you?
No, I don't think there's... Actually, if anything, I think season one had a few bits and pieces that they tried to pick up on. So I know that, you know, coming of age, folk rolling into conspiracy, and, you know, some other bits and pieces, they try to keep things going. I actually think that in season two, it's a bit of a, like, it seems to be a bit of a fresh start, in particular with the, you know, the crew being, well, not the crew being new, but certainly you have Crusher having left. You effectively still have the aftermath of Yar having left at the end of season one. So you've got a repositioned crew with Worf coming into security and, you know, and the Doctor being new. And I think it took them a while for them to kind of develop those characters into those roles. And yet, one thing that's unfortunate now, of course, is that, you know, from Pulaski's perspective, she no longer features going forward. So I think the development there has been in the Pulaski character, which I think has been, you know, overall has been good in season mm-hmm. two. All of that is effectively thrown out the window. Yes. I do like that we've done. I think that Riker has come into more of a forefront. I think he's more mature. Maybe it's the beard, but in episodes like A Matter of Honor, he, you know, we spoke how it was only, you know, it was only possibly going to be Riker taking on this role, and I think he did very well in that episode. I think in peak performance as well, he kind of, you know, he's at the center. He's not just the young dude they send on an away mission for dangerous situations. He's not just the action man when you can't have a 55-year-old action man doing stuff on the planet. So I think that I see this season in particular with, you know, Worf and Riker growing in their roles, and, you know, obviously the development being poured into the new Doctor, which unfortunately doesn't go anywhere.
So what do you think about the Ferengi compared to season one? It seemed like they developed quite a bit, and that blind shot and peak performance was pretty awesome, actually.
When do we pick up the... When are the Ferengi in season two? Is it just peak performance?
Peak performance, yeah.
And then in season one, remind me, did they come other than the battle?
The whips, remember? Well,
yeah, so they were in the last outpost, and I think they were in the battle. Mm-hmm. But I don't think they were in anything other than that. I seem to recall in the battle mentioning that I think they've kind of given up on them for all intents and purposes as a threat character. Cause I think I mentioned words to the effect that I think the battle, they, you know, in the end, they just got rid of them by trying to scare them, and they ran away. And I think in peak performance, they do a similar thing where, through a bluff, they get rid of the Ferengi. So I think the Ferengi have just, you know, people have left them as a serious character, and then, you know, we'll obviously see where this goes into the future.
And then they tried to bring them back with a bang for peak performance, but still went back to the same, how do we get rid of them? Oh, let's make them think, Leda, another starship is closing in. Whatever. Okay, yeah, they shouldn't have fallen for that. So I guess we'll have to wait for DS9 till we get a real Ferengi episode. Although the Ferengi did take over the Enterprise until the pack of children overdid them. But we'll get to that another time, too.
Yeah, meeting of two great minds. A bunch of Ferengi and a bunch of kids.
Any episodes that really stand out for you? For me, The Measure of a Man obviously stands out. But I also loved Pen Pals. And even though I gave it a 4, I still say the moral debate in the perfectly vicious little circle was awesome. And I know some people don't really like Pen Pals, but I thought it was a very, very cute episode. Because once that little voice came out of the radio, we had to do something. Be damned about the rules. But is there any episodes that really stand out for you?
I mean, yes. I mean, looking back on it, I mean, even going right to the beginning, I by the way, one thing I should put in note to the listeners is that I do not remember what I gave these, and I do not have a list of like marks out of 5 that I gave the episodes on hand. So I might be saying something contradictory to what I said during the review show. I suspect the reason why is that, you know, when you review something critically, you end up having, you know, the pros and cons, and you make up your mind. Whereas now, thinking back, I'm more thinking back about, you know, what were my thoughts, what were the things I took away from the show. And I certainly remember, you know, Where Silence Is Least, and the atmosphere, I suppose, that was very unique at that stage. I think that they didn't previously have something set in this kind of really, really spooky kind of world. And I remember having watched that as a child, and I was very happy to, you know, I was very happy to revisit that one. I mean, of course, I think the standouts, as you mentioned, are going to be things like The Measure of a Man, which is a, you know, a great kind of debating episode. I like that if you look like week on week where you went from, right, on that one, you went, well, a couple of weeks before you had unnatural selection with a kind of like a mystery virusy thing that's going to be infecting people, and you know, a good performance from Pulaski. You roll into a Matter of Honor with Riker going over to a Klingon ship and learning about alien cultures and the threat that that had, and then it rolls into this kind of courtroom drama about the philosophical ramifications of what is life. And I think that that kind of variation is very Star Trek-y, and I think actually season two has more of this kind of stuff than season one was, which was, I think, more often more action-packed, or at least, you know, issue of the week A when you went to planet and told them how to live their life. Now, I'm always a big fan as well of Q-Who, and I was astonished revisiting Q-Who as to how well it held up. You know, we all know where the Borg go, and I think that, obviously, as we'll find out next time, with The Best of Both Worlds, it's kind of like a real great storyline when they come back. But I was very happy with Q-Who and the amount of tension that it kind of built into the episode. I also liked the fact that Q-Who was there at the beginning and will be there at the end, of course, and how he always is there to test humanity. I like the way that Q effectively introduces the Federation into the Borg and, you know, puts us on that path that is going to be, you know, so important for the years to come.
Okay, so maybe we could talk about some of the people who were in season two, like, say, the guest stars. And what I did is I made a printout of all the guest stars, and I thought, instead of just giving the best and worst of the guest stars, we could do that later. But why don't we talk about the guest stars? Give them each a 1 to 5 rating. There's not too many that we couldn't go through it real quick. Starting with the child, we have Seymour Castle as Hester Delt. I was giving Hester a 3. Kind of like middle of the road. What do you think?
I have no recollection. This is the crazy scientist, right?
No, he's the one that's transporting
He's a scientist nonetheless.
Yeah, he's a pharmacist, and he had one piece of sample that almost destroyed the ship when Deanna had her light bulb baby.
Now, this is weird. I'll often get him confused. I mean, I think he was perfectly fine as a character, but I often will get him confused with the guy that we're going to meet next time. I think he was perfectly fine, middle of the road.
Well, then instead of doing every one of them, maybe we'll just do some that, you know, we all obviously would know, like Nagilam. What do you think of Nagilam? I was giving him a 4.
I think Nagilam was absolutely fantastic, and I think that the concept there of the alien and how he was presented was just so unique. As a child, I had horrendous nightmares about something like this living out there, and just for the concept alone, and he's a straight 5 out of 5 for me.
All right, yeah, he gave me this creepy, evil cat-like look to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, how about in the same episode where Silence has Elise, we have poor Haskell that blows a brain aneurysm, and he's actually the only one. Really, there's 19 people that I counted that died in season two. Haskell was the first one for season two, when he was just sitting there in Wesley's spot because Wesley called in sick that day or something, and he blows a brain aneurysm and dies on the bridge.
Now, it wasn't just that he had called in sick that day. Wesley was literally at the station, you know, the scene before, and he was at the station the scene after. So he was, you know, he was on a loo break or something. When unfortunately the bad stuff happened.
Okay, so we had Nagilam, and I gave Haskell a 2 because I was generous. I mean, well, all he did was scream and die.
That's right.
You'll know Professor James Moriarty.
Now, I think that, yeah, Moriarty was great, right? I think I'm really happy that they were able to get him back later in season. I assume it's season six. But I thought that the character, you know, the actor playing him was very good, and I enjoyed this particular show as well. I thought that he was a great guest star, and I think he kind of, you know, more than held his own throughout the episode, both against either both Data and Pulaski, and then also at the end with Picard. And I remember referring to this as the most Star Trek-y ending in the world, where, you know, Patrick Stewart and this guy sit down, philosophically discuss sentience or whatever it happened to be, and then agree that the threat's over and they move on. So, no, I was a big fan of this guy.
All right, so I'll give the non-English Englishman a 5.
Oh, I'll give him a 5 as well.
Yeah. And then we have in the same episode Inspector Lestrade. Oh, the deuce of a dilemma! Sorry, I didn't quite get into him. I mean, how could he possibly be a detective of any kind if he's asking Sherlock Holmes how this murder could have taken place? So I'm giving Inspector Lestrade a 2.
I think that would be about right.
Yeah. And then we have for the Outrageous Akana, we have William Campbell as Okana 2. I hated Okana. Couldn't stand him. And then I was lumping Yanar and Benzon in 1 and calling them a 1, in fact. Joe Piscopo as Comic, because Joe Piscopo is generally funny, just not here. Obviously, he didn't write these jokes, so therefore he shouldn't be charged with the crime. So I'll give him a 3. Now, Devin and Cashel, I gave them a 3 because I thought they were just downright funny. Just, I mean, even when they were on a 3-way conference call and Picard mutes our side of the conference, but you see those two continuing to bark at each other in the conference call. I thought that was hilarious, so I gave them a 3. And then Terry Hatcher. Now, she's going to get a 5, but as a transporter operator, a 3. That makes sense.
So all of this was from Outrageous Okona, and bad memories I have, I'm afraid. Bad memories. I mean, the only thing I would go as far as saying is that I'm sure that the gentleman playing Okona is a perfectly reasonable person in human, perfectly reasonable human and a great upstanding member of the community. But I am just not in love with that character.
Okay. Yeah, right. Me either. Loud as a Whisper. So, of course, we have Reva. Reva is the mediator, and he's the deaf mediator. But first, let's talk about his chorus. I did all 3 of them. I put them together. I thought the chorus was pretty awesome. Speak to me! He was intense. So I was giving the chorus a 4. But Reva, on the other hand, he deserves a 5. Howie just knocks this one out of the park, I'm afraid. So.
No, I have to say that I've come around to your thoughts on that. I agree. I agree that both Reva himself is a very good character and portrayed very well. And then I also like the concept of the chorus, and I think they did well. The only memory that I have, or the only, I suppose, guilt that I have, is that I remember hating this episode for so long. I never liked Loud as a Whisper, and I would have been young when I watched it, and I just thought it was slow and it was boring and not much happened. And it's really only for the, you know, going back to it to review for this show that I actually realized that there's actually a lot there, and it's pretty good.
Okay, then we have Schizoid Man. We have Lieutenant Salar, played by Susie Plaxen, and of course everything Susie does is awesome anyway. Even as a cold Vulcan, I gave her a 5. William Morgan Shepherd, of course, gets a 5 because he's William Morgan Shepherd. But he plays Ira Graves, and I thought he was really great with that one. But I ended up giving that a 2.5. So the story stank, but the actors were good. Then, of course, we have Corinne Brannan, who's a little ditzy. She gets about a 3. All right. Unnatural Selection. And that one I gave a 4.5. I really did like the story and the moral debate of And this is interesting because doesn't this smack right in the heart of genetically enhanced? I mean, the Federation is against genetically enhanced, but yet they're doing that with these children.
Yeah, no, when we had the debate about this, we got to the point where we started, you know, the question became, you know, to what extent is this just doing genetic engineering? And when later we learned that you're not supposed to do genetic engineering. When I was thinking about this, and in my mind, in order to kind of, you know, justify or retcon all of this, I'm possibly thinking that what they were doing here is that they were studying, you know, they're studying genetics, and they weren't supposed to be doing any genetic engineering, as in, you know, changes to the genome, rather than just studying it and looking for, you know, whatever telltale signs would be of illness, or at least that kind of research. But I think anyone that states that this is a little bit, this gets kind of rewritten out of history when you move on to things like Judy and Bashir and how genetically modified people are not, not allowed in Starfleet and it's really frowned upon. I think they do have a point.
Okay, so in this one we have Patricia Smith as Dr. Sarah Kingsley, and I thought she was pretty good, so I gave her a 4. A Matter of Honor, Captain Kargon. I might be my vessel. He's a kind of mediocre Klingon captain, so I gave him a 3. Are they called captains, or what's a Klingon captain called? I don't know.
I'm gonna say captain.
Okay.
Can you say captain?
Next time we talk to Brian, maybe I'll remember. Ensign Mendon. He was just funny, and he didn't mean to be, so I gave him a 4.
I liked Ensign Mendon.
Yes. And then we have Brian Thompson as First Officer Clagg. I thought Clagg was pretty good, too. He's a good explanation of a Klingon warrior, and he did a lot of explaining their culture, so I gave him a 4. The Measure of a Man, of course. Now, we have Commander Bruce Maddox. What do you think of Maddox? I was thinking his performance was a good 4.
No, I agree. You're not supposed to particularly like the character, but I think he did absolutely fine in the show.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, you can, you know, an interesting point of you're not supposed to like the character, but you do is Gul Dukat. I agree with everyone who says that, you know, he's the worst. He's an absolute top villain possible. But when Gul Dukat is on the episode, you know it's going to be good, and that's Mark Alamo that does that. So anyway, Admiral Nakamura, we're gonna do some work on your android, Captain, so stay out of the way.
Yeah, and then bye.
Bye. He
disappears very, very quickly in the show.
Yeah, he's spineless. He's not an HF, so he's a 2 at best, or maybe a 1. I gave him a 1.5. I'm gonna scratch that 2 and make it a 1.5. He doesn't even have a spine to say, well, let's take this to your ready room. Okay, and Captain Philippa Lavoie, 5 all the way. Right?
You think so? You like that?
I love her. I think she's awesome. Yeah. What do you think for Lavoie? 4, 3?
I think a good 4. I like the way, I mean, I think one thing in particular in this episode, with this character, is that you know that there's history between her and Picard. But they don't just stand around and, you know, put a whole lot of exposition onto the screen. You can see that there is history there, but it doesn't have to be explained. And I think it shows a good well-rounded character has been written that Picard can work with.
Right. Okay, so then we'll go on to the Dolphar. And we have Anya and Celia. Anya's a 3. I think Anya was pretty awesome. She'd maybe even be touching a 4. But Celia won. Can't stand Celia. Her and her big bubble butt. Which, by the way, did anybody go back when I said that? Somebody at least said that they're going to have to go back and check that out. Did anybody do that?
I'm actually confused as to what do you mean by bubble butt?
She got a big butt for a teenage girl.
She wasn't a teenage girl. She was 25 in that episode.
That's true. Well, she's got a big butt for a 25. But then again, so do I, so I should shut my mouth. We have Contagion, Captain Donald Volley. He's, I think his character is a 4. I think his decision-making is a 2.
I mean, he killed all of his crew within seconds of being on screen.
Exactly.
He's generous.
It may be. Yeah. And then we have Sub-Commander Taras of the Hakoma. Is that the name of the Romulan ship, I believe? Taras. She, if I remember, Carolyn Seymour comes on as other things in Star Trek, too.
Yes, he comes on as a Romulan commander in face of the enemy.
Ah, okay. Yeah. So, yeah, I liked her. So she, I bet she's about a 3. You did this. No, actually we didn't. You did it to yourself, but anyway. The Royale. The only time you'll ever see a huge bet on a craps table that loses not get picked up. Never going to see it again. We have the assistant manager, Spineless Weasel. He's a 2. The bellboy had more guts. He's a 4. But then again, he does get killed by a shot in the back, so make him a 3. We have Vanessa. She's wearing her 4. and then Texas. What do you think of Texas? Noble Willingham. I thought Texas was damned awesome, so he's funny. Boy, I'm giving Texas a 5.
I liked him as well. He was good. And I liked how he stood against Data right at the end.
Right.
Just to get upset. Which, oh, was there something I said? Was it because I didn't show you my car?
Yeah. I'll be in my car when you walk out and I'm going to roll over you, boy. Times Square didn't have any other guest stars except for Colm Meaney as a transporter, well, as Miles O'Brien, but I'm not even sure if he still had a name there.
I mean, having said all of this, right, I think Colm Meaney has been, he's been throughout season 2, and I think that he's a, I don't think he does anything really in season 2. I don't think he does anything until the end of season 4 when he gets, mid-season 4 when he gets married, but I enjoy seeing young O'Brien. It's good that he's here and he's, pops up every now and again just for a couple of, beam me up, beam me down kind of scenes.
And to make a couple comments here and there. Okay, so then the Icarus Factor, we have Mitchell Ryan as Kyle Riker. I liked Kyle Riker. I mean, I know Will doesn't, but I do. He had a reverence about him, so I'm giving him a 4.
Yeah, and for some reason, personally, I just didn't quite like the character. It's a bit, But anyway, I don't have a huge amount to say about him.
Okay. All right. Pin Pals. Of course, we have Nikki Cox as Sarzenka, and I know Nikki Cox grows up to be at least a 4.5 or possible 5, but Sarzenka, I like Sarzenka. She was cute, and of course, she's the reason why we had to violate the Prime Directive, and so therefore, if she can make the senior staff of the Enterprise sit in a room and hammer out this moral debate we've got ourselves into, obviously, Sarzenka deserves a 4. Davies, Hildebrandt, and Allens, the crew that get to work for Wesley Crusher, I didn't like any of them, actually, for some reason. So I gave them a 2 at best. Okay, so unless you have anything on that, I'll go to Q Who. John Delancey as Q. What?
Yeah, no, John Delancey coming back as Q was absolutely great, and I think this is really the first time we see, maybe it's not the first time we see Q in his good Q-ness, but he's certainly great in this episode, in my mind.
Oh, he's a 5.
Straight 5, and I think it's really great how he plays Picard and, what he does in the episode and the way that Picard has to basically beg him to be saved at the end of the show. And I just love everything about Q in this episode. I think he does really, really well. And, yeah, of course, introduces everyone to the Borg.
Okay. And then we have Sonia Gomez, who spills hot chocolate on the captain. That knocks her down a couple pegs, so she gets a 2. I just found Ensign Gomez a little annoying, actually. And that's probably why she's gone after the next terrible one. Samaritan Snare. The Packleds. I've said it before. We have a lot of jokes to say about the Packleds. But if you think about it, I thought they were awesome. The Packleds are funny, and because of them, we have a lot of different catchphrases, as you pointed out in this review. All these catchphrases that have come out of it is, you know, it will make us go. We like things that make us go. If it can do that, it's got to be good. We gave Samaritan Snare, I gave it a 3.5, you gave it a 4, and Sean gave it a 4.5. So, as far as Sonya, again, she's a 2. I find her annoying. Then we have the Packleds. I'm giving the Packleds a 3. I thought the Packleds, they're okay. Even one that I still say was kind of giving Geordi special looks. And they have another one here about the biomolecular specialist. I guess that's the doctor who would not make the polyencyclic encyclopedia or something like that. So he is kind of mundane. He was getting a 2.
So I'm completely lost here. Where was this?
Well, this is when Picard was getting his new heart. And they.
Oh, of course it was.
Yeah, we'll all be out of here in time for lunch. I expect no problems. And then, of course, he couldn't do it. So he calls in a specialist who says, well, I'm not going to do it. Well, I'm not going to do it. Well, let's get Mikey. He'll eat it. And, of course, they have to bring down Pulaski, who saves the day.
Just for being incompetent, they're getting very low marks from me.
Right, gives him a 2. Okay, so then we have Up the Long Ladder. Up the Long Cliché, as I guess you could call it. Denethor O'Dell. I guess some people don't like this episode because of what it does to the Irish, but I thought he was funny, but he gets a 4. Brenna, anyone who could shut a Klingon down is awesome. I'm giving her a 5. She is awesome, and plus she has the cleanest feet of all the Bring Lloydy. And then we have Granger, the clones. I thought he was kind of flat, but I gave him a 3. What do you think?
I really didn't like this episode. Although apparently I didn't give it a 1. I gave it more than a 1. I thought that I thought this was a bit of a car crash of an episode. I think the reason why I didn't get the 1 from me was that towards the end, when they decided to do something about cloning or integration of, you know, of immigrants into society or whatever the main message was supposed to be for that day, I think it showed that there are some interesting thoughts behind it. Now, I didn't mind the head of the Irish guys that much. I was frustrated by his daughter falling for Riker within seconds and ending up in his quarters in some type of skimpy outfits. I just thought that portrayed her as being a little bit weak. It's probably the wrong word, but I didn't think she needed to. They needed to have that scene.
No. Okay. Yeah, it is a little difficult. Okay, so then let's go on to Manhunt. We have Majel Barrett as Luoxana Troi. I don't know what you feel about Luoxana Troi, but I absolutely love her. So I give her a 5. Mr. Holm doesn't have to say a word, and he gets a 4. Madeline, the holographic character, is about a 3, if best. And then we have Robert Costanzo. That sounds familiar to me for some reason. That name, Costanzo. Anyway, he played Slade Bender. You know, you're getting on my nerves. I give him a 4. He's got the gangster man down really, really good. And I have tried to figure out a way to reach out to this guy just because we share the same last name. Can't help. Can't get it. There's no way I can find him. And then we have Rex, the bartender. I thought Rex was about a 3. If he knew his last name, he may even get a 4. But don't think he has one. Just Rex. Then we got the emissary. We have Kalar. So, the story of the Klingon ship that's been sleeping for 80 years, and now they're going to kill us. Admiral Grummock. She's about a 3. She couldn't give us any information on what the heck was going on. Sorry. But that's what we got Susie Plaxton for, and as I said before, Susie gets a 5. And then we have Katamach, the captain. I have orders to fire all Federation ships. What do you think of him? I thought he was a 4.
I thought he was okay. I'm just really confused as to why would he have orders to go to sleep for 70 years and then wake up and fire on all Federation ships? It didn't make much sense, just looking back. But obviously, this is the second appearance, of course, of Susie Plaxton this year. I'm very happy that she managed to be brought back, because often they won't allow people to be brought back just because it's within the universe continuity. You don't want the same actors appearing as different characters. I assume that they thought that there was enough makeup on and enough difference between Dr. Salah versus Kalar that it was okay. And I think it was great that they did so. I'm a big fan of Kalar and look forward to her coming back in season four, I believe it is.
Yes. Okay, for one more time, that is. Okay, so peak performance. We have Ray Brocksmith as Serna Kalrami. I gave Kalrami a 5. I don't see him getting anything else but a 5. Just all he has to do is make a sound, and he's you know what he's thinking. So snide and condescending. I like it. So he gets a 5. Do you agree with that, or what do you think?
No, I actually do agree, and I think one of the main I think one of the good things about when you have these one-time aliens or alien species is that you realize that. You realize if it's worked, if you can very easily, quickly identify with them. And I think things like the, in season two in particular, at the end of season two, we're looking back at the Borg, and it's very clear that everyone knows who the Borg are, and it's just a one-time shot at the moment. With regard to the Pakleds, even though they were never revisited, everyone knows who the Pakleds are. Now, I would say that this gentleman as well, everyone knows who he is, and he's only been in one episode, and I think it's a sign that it works very well, that he's so memorable. Now, he doesn't have to be this memorable for the actual peak performance storyline to have worked. So I think, hats off to the guy for pulling it out of the bag and for it being this well written. Because even though we don't see this, and I think we only see one more of his species in TNG, I still remember this guy, and he's and his arrogance and his and the performance he put over was memorable.
Okay. Yeah, Zach Dorn. Then we have Ensign Burke. There was really nothing big about him, so... I mean, he had to be taught what Klingon guile is. So let's give him a 3. Ensign Nagel. And I was having trouble remembering who Ensign Nagel was. She's the one that they're gonna fall for. Is that Nagel? I think.
Do not have that information at disposal. Right.
I think so, but anyway, if it is, she was about a 2 or 3. And then we have Armin Shimerman as Brakdor. Of course, Armin Shimerman as Brakdor is going to get a 5 for me. I love Armin Shimerman. His performance is great. And, I remember hearing a interview that was done. He actually came out on one of the morning shows in his Ferengi gear, and then showed the comparison, and he talked about how he realized what they did wrong in TNG, and so when he was able to do Quark, he was able to right his mistakes and redo the whole Ferengi culture, and I think they did a good job there. So, and that brings us to the end. It's for the one-time guest shots, or I guess they're not really recurring, except for maybe Susie, but I still would consider her the, one time, not someone that comes back like a Gul Dukat does. So I'm going to say I think the best one for season 2 is probably Susie Plaxton, with an honorable mention going to Kalrami.
No, I would agree with that. Although, let me just point out something that we have missed. And we've kind of like missed her because of... She falls between, right, the recurring cast and the one-time,
yeah,
one-timers, which is Guinan. Guinan, of course, introduced in season two, comes in, what, maybe is it five episodes or so?
Right.
How do you think she... what do you think of her character and how she's done this year?
Well, let's jump ahead. Actually, she would be a recurring character, and I actually was given her a five as well. I was given her the best recurring character for the season.
Ah.
I do.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, so how many are on the recurring characters list? I assume just her and Pulaski.
Pretty much. Yeah, I think so. It's not like DS9 where they have a whole bunch of Garaks and Quarks and Roms and Nogs. I mean, those would be the recurring, not the main cast. So it's not the same as what they used to do. So you're right. As far as the weakest one-time character, I guess mine goes to Haskell. He was lame. So, let's see. What else here? So let's check that one off that we did. And of course, recurring cast, we both agreed it goes to Guinan.
Yep, I'll say so.
Okay. How about the main cast? Go ahead.
No, regarding Guinan, I think he was... I don't know to what extent this actually happened, you know, back in the 80s when it was being recorded, but I like the idea of having someone come on that who's not going to be there every single week, but is, you know, plays a relatively, and doesn't necessarily play an important role, but plays a role that allows the characters around her to be developed. So she's a specific character you go to and you have a bit of a chat, and it allows you, kind of like, you know, it allows the character speaking to them to reveal something about their you know, their background, and or possibly to learn. And I'm a big Guinan fan. I think we've had discussions in the past about whether or not it weakens the Troy character, but I think that it's very, when used at its best, I think it is a different character to Troy, and the type of conversations that Picard in particular would have with Guinan are different to that which Troy would have. So I'm a big fan of what, with her being brought onto the show.
Okay, well then, actually, you know, and I realized I made a mistake on the child. Obviously, I forgot Zachary Benjamin as Ian. We have R.J. Williams as Ian, and then we have a younger Ian by Zachary Benjamin. So what do we think of Ian as a one-time character? I thought he was okay. I'd give Ian a three.
I mean, I think he was okay as well, and I think I got out of the child. I was happy that it wasn't as bad as I thought it could be, which is kind of not exactly a huge amount of praise, but I was, you know, I think it could have been a lot worse. And in particular, for example, for the child actors involved, I thought they were fine. I don't think anything was great, and I'm sure that had they got someone worse than they did, it could have been very bad. But overall, I thought it was nothing better than fine.
Okay. And I did also miss Mick Fleetwood as well.
Yes.
So, yeah... I have to go back to where I said, yeah, I gave Mick Fleetwood a two, because like I said, you know, it's not his fault that his role was to stand in a transporter room and look like a fish. But then I go, I don't know. It was a wasted appearance to me. I think it should have been better.
Well, although at the same time, I like the idea that Trek is getting to the stage where it can get, you know, famous people on, or even, you know, famous fans on with just cameos, because it's not really a guest starring role. It's much more of a, you know, it's much more of a cameo. They didn't need to credit the guy. It could have been anyone. So I quite like that.
All right then. So recurring, I was given to Guinan, and you've kind of agreed. So what about the worst of the recurring roles?
Well, I think I've already mentioned that I'm not a big fan of Dr. Pulaski.
Yeah.
I think in the end, Dr. Pulaski does fine overall, and I think that the development that the character gets is good. I would argue that the development that Crusher got in the first season was also good, and they were leading down certain paths, certainly with things like Arsenal of Freedom, with her kind of, you know, conversation and development with Picard. But overall, I have to say I'm happy that we moved back to Crusher at the end of the year, and then she comes back on board.
You know, I didn't realize this. I don't know where I read it. I don't know if it was on Memory Alpha or another website that actually Gates McFadden was fired. But yet the pressure from the fans, and it didn't work out with Pulaski, that they probably had to go back begging to her, please come back. Hopefully she got well compensated for that. So, okay. Now, the main cast. I think my favorite person on the main cast this year has to be William Riker. Certainly isn't going to be Wesley Crusher. Deanna Troi, I don't know about that. But yes, William Riker this year. What about you?
Well, I think that, I mean, we kind of mentioned a little bit at the beginning, but there were like personnel changes this year. And in particular, you know, Worf specifically goes over security. And I know that he did security towards the very end of season one, but now he's in his gold shirt and he's doing this much more properly. We also had the fact that Geordi went downstairs to engineering.
Right.
And I think that, in my mind, I think that has worked well. I think that's throughout this season, I think he's been a better and more engaged character than he was when he was, a red shirt up on the bridge. I think that there has been development in Riker, and Riker's got to do some good things and things that are not just, you know, I'm the guy that goes down to the planet. So I think Riker has actually also been good. I think overall, though, something that I've actually enjoyed Picard this year. I think that on a couple of the big shows or the shows that I've enjoyed, I think Picard has actually really shone. I think that he came out very well in A Measure of a Man, and he kind of leads with the big moral quandary that they're in. I think he also has a similar approach in Q-Hu as well, when he has to stand up to Q about things, and he's ultimately arguing from the wrong side to begin with when he believes that the humans are ready to go out, and in the end he has to learn that perhaps not. So really, overall, I've really enjoyed Picard this season, and I think I came in with season one as being not the biggest fan of Picard. I thought he was too written in a too much stuck up kind of way. Okay. So I'd hand my person of the year to Picard.
Okay. And the opposite end of the spectrum, who would have been the least? And by the way, I do want to mention that, yes, I was thinking Geordi the Fourth probably should get an honorable mention in there. So I liked his promotion to chief engineer. It involves him more in the storylines, which I think, you know, LaVar's got the chops for. So, but anyway,
yeah. So I suppose I can't use Pulaski as both my worst main crew and my worst recurrer, because I'm sorely tempted to. I am not convinced we get a lot of growth this year, or we haven't got a lot of growth this year out of Wesley. I don't know if I'm really stepping out of line there, but I know we had the Dolphin, and was there really much else than that? I mean, he pops up every now and again, and he was a bit annoying in Peak Performance, and so I'm not convinced that Wesley was utilized a lot this season, and I might roll down to him.
Me too. I would probably say him as well. Although he did do some good in the Icarus Factor. You know, he did figure out what was bothering Worf. And not only did he have to figure that out, he had to figure out what to do to help him. So,
but the Icarus Factor really sucked.
It did, but still, you know, he was half usable there. And then we have him even in The Child. You know, he's taking command of something. It wasn't anything important. He really didn't do very much good in command, but he exhibited some of the fears that everybody who gets tossed into a command structure, when you're not a commander, you're not even a real officer. So, I mean, in the end, he just didn't do enough to really solidify him, and I can't give any of the main cast too much, except for maybe Troi. There were some points that Troi was useless for. Captain, I sense they're mad at us. Yes, I know the torpedo senses that too. So, okay. Okay, so did we see any real advances in technology at all? I didn't notice anything. I mean, the bridge layout was different. There's blinky lights on the sides now where there just used to be wooden panels.
You know, I really barely noticed these changes, and it's probably bad of me to admit that I'm just so I just don't really notice this stuff.
We have Ten Ford was brought on, and so that was good.
But not necessarily technology, though.
No. Well, it depends on how you know, we have Guinan behind the bar using technology to make drinks, but...
I mean, and the one thing we did get in Season 2 is the endless use of the, sub-warp shuttle to go, to put someone into a secondary storyline, going somewhere extremely slowly for no reason at all.
Right. It had taken 10 minutes to drop Picard and Wesley off, and then you finish the mission, but nope. Okay. And then, maybe somebody else would have had to take care of the packleds, and maybe they were too stupid. I meant the someone else, maybe, not the packleds. So what did you think? Let's go overall, not looking at our scores. Overall, on a scale of 1 to 5, how do we rate Season 2 of TNG?
I think I'd come in around a 3. I think it's middle-of-the-road Trek.
I agree. That's what I was thinking, too. It's a 3. Next season, I'm sure we're going there's gonna be a little bit higher. How did our scores come out? We had, I did 1 to 1.5, 2 to 2.5, 3 to 3.5, 4 to 4.5, and 5. Of the 1 to 1.5, we rated it at 2. I rated it a 2. I had 2 of them. You had 2 ones, only ones, because you don't do 0.5s, and our guest had 1. Now, I even went a little bit further the other day. I went through our forum feedback, and now you guys have probably been wondering all season, why do I put on the forum post, please give us your rating on a scale of 1 to 5? This is why. Of the responses that we received, there were 2 ones or 1.5s in the forum for Season 2. Of 2 to 2.5, I had 6 of them. James, you had 3 of them. Our guest had 1. And our forum feedback had 2. 3 to 3.5, I had 7. You had 7. Our guest had 5. And our forum had 4. 4 to 4.5, I had 6. You had 8. Our guest had 6. And our forum posters had 4. Fives. Who gave fives? I gave 1 5 this year, which, if I remember correctly, going back to Season 1, I gave 0 5s. So, I'm getting better. 1 5. You had 2 of them. Oh, my 5 was a measure of a man. Yours was also the measure of a man in Q-Who. Our guests gave 2 of them, 2 5s. That was Paul Wright, or Fur Bob, who did Elementary Dear Data, and Blair Donnelly, who did Q-Who. But the majority of the 5s came from our forum, and I'm probably pretty sure that that's going to be Ben, who did that, Captain Proton, who gave us the most 5s. But those were the child, I don't know how. Unnatural Selection, Time Squared, Samaritan Snare, and Up the Long Ladder. Now, there were some episodes that the forum posters they gave feedback on, but they didn't give any ratings. So they were marked as 0 for The Schizoid Man, A Matter of Honor, How, I don't know, Contagion, Q-Who. Q-Who got no votes in the forum for some reason, Manhunt, and Peak Performance. In the end, our average rating, you gave it a 3 and I gave it a 3. My average rating for Season 2 was 3.09. Yours was 3.23. Our guests, who have still liked Star Trek better than we do, was 3.63. And even though the forum didn't get a lot of votes. It's still, this is an imprecise tabulation because a lot of them weren't even voted on. That comes out to a 4.06. So I had some of those dogs like Schizoid Man actually gotten a rating. It may not be so high. How did that compare with the season one? Mine was a 2.71 for season one. And of course, season two is up 3.09 for an average of 2.90 for the series so far. James, season one is 2.77. Again, your season two went up to 3.23. So you average a 3.0 for the whole series. And our guest, I don't know how this could have happened. Season 2 was 3.63. Season 1, 3.61. So our guests were much more even than we were and gave it an average of 3.62 for the entire series so far. And, by the way, there was one in the forum for Times Squared. Colin got a 5 stars from Captain Proton. So he rated the episode a 5, he rated Colin a 5, but he didn't rate us. So, all right, that's that. So, we also want to thank the guests who've come on onto the show. And as I look at them, it looks like Data Logan had a couple shows that he was on. 3 of them, in fact. Colin was on for 3 as well. And then, of course, Paul Finch was on for the Outrageous Arcana and must have flipped us the bird because he hasn't been on since. Yeah, that's right, Paul. I said that. and, of course, we haven't heard from Mark Stamper since A Matter of Honor. So, hey, but that's okay. What do we have for Season 3 so far? Season 3, right now, we have a number 18 guests that are on the schedule for 26 episodes. So we still have 8 episodes to go that somebody can get on. The quickest one would be The Survivors, followed by The Price, The Vengeance Factor, A Matter of Perspective. I'm curious why that's empty still. Captain's Holiday, another one I don't get. Hollow Pursuits, how could somebody not want to do that one? And Menage a Troy.
Actually, I have to say, I don't know if you heard, but I was on a 10 Forward about a week ago discussing Allegiance. Mm-hmm. So it was, I think that's a good show.
Yeah, I think so. So basically, guys, this is what we do. The first person after hearing this, if you get on and send an email to lewtrekshow@gmail.com, tell me which one you want of those. The Survivors, The Price, The Vengeance Factor, A Matter of Perspective, Captain's Holiday, Hollow Pursuits, and Menage a Troy. We try to limit each person to no more than 3 per show, gets more people a chance, unless we get to that point, and then we'll see if somebody wants to go ahead and take it. But go ahead and get your stuff in quickly. The first one that says, I want this, you're going to be the one that gets it. So there we go. How about our forum posters? Speaking of our forum posters, you want to do a little bit of feedback here, James?
Yep, sure. I think we're a little bit behind.
Yeah, we are. I believe we left off at Manhunt. Do you remember doing Manhunt forum?
Do you know, I don't remember doing any forum ever, but I've had a busy. it's been a while since we've done forums, so I just have a bad memory.
Yeah, because obviously it's from Karen McDuff, and he mentions a haircut on a Pinsky, and so it sounds familiar, but I don't remember reading it, so I'm going to go ahead and read it then. He says, Manhunt, or that episode where Wrecker nearly lives out his mother-daughter fantasy. Yes, we did read that. Now that I remember. So I wondered about that one. I'm pretty sure we read that. So, The Emissary. All right. So we get another one from Kieran McDuff. He tries to get in quickly. He says, before I get in, go ahead.
So I was just saying, you're going to have to wake up pretty early in the morning to get one ahead of Kieran.
Right. I wonder how he does it. I mean, do you think maybe he's my first downloader?
But, yeah, possibly.
Could be. I mean, he's up all night waiting for the ding, there it is. Or, I can't do the Scottish, oh, there it is. No. Before I get into the emissary, I want to say that it was an excellent point about the changelings being scary. I think the Borg were scarier, but the idea that anyone could be a changeling is a terrific twist. The Borg's inevitability is truly scary, but I think the major scary point of the changelings is your own fear. You don't actually need anyone to be a changeling, you just need the fear that they could be. Okay, now on to the emissary. He says, I agree with all of you, but I'm surprised you didn't make more of just how major the holes in this plot were for the emissary. Well, didn't we give it quite a bit of plot holes? But that's all right. They can't defend against one.
Are you sure it's not canny?
They canny defend against a 75-year-old Klingon sheep. See, I couldn't do it that either. I've heard this man, and my attempt to do a Scottish accent will do no justice. So, they can't defend against one 75-year-old Klingon ship. Really? I'm sorry, that's a ridiculous premise. If they were attacking non-Federation outposts, I could almost understand it, but they weren't. This old Klingon ship would be no match for anything around the late 24th century. For that same reason, I can't believe that they have a cloak they can't find. Again, it's 75 years old. They've probably figured out how to crack it by now. Additionally, didn't they make it a point in the Enterprise incident in the original series? Can you remind me what he's talking about? Didn't they make this point in the Enterprise incident in the original series?
No, I don't recall exactly what happened on the original series episode, but I've always considered cloaking technology as something that is not perfect, and you know, you put a cloak on that is good enough to fool the current sensors, and then someone comes along and invents sensors that are better and then can see the ship through the cloak, and then your cloaking technology has to improve, and then the sensor technology elsewhere improves, and it's kind of like a bit of an arms race like that. So I think that the overall point is just that if you're reliant on, you know, it's a bit like, you know, the sonar technology and, you know, things being not being able to be picked up on radar as well. So whatever you currently have out there that can go effectively blind into the current radar, you probably wouldn't be able to use that in 75 years time once the technology has become more precise. So I think that's really what he's just on about.
Well, he goes on to say, technology moves on fast enough that things become obsolete very quickly. 75 years is a long time in the technology war. Also, I have no idea why the Klingons sent out a sleeper ship either.
Yes.
Where was it going? Well, not very far, if this episode is anything to go by. Did it get lost? They didn't seem to suggest that it was the case. The Klingons had warp drive 75 years ago, so they could have reached this point no bother at all. I'll admit it. I like Brian's idea of them being behind enemy lines and effectively forgotten about. But even that still seems a big leap. It just doesn't make any sense at all to me at all. The generational ship that Voyager encounters in Prophecy years later makes far more sense than the sleeper ship. And then we come to sending Kalar in a torpedo. It's just bizarre. There seems to be absolutely no reason for this decision either. She didn't need to sneak about, did she? It's not like Klingons are sneaking around that specific area. Kalar must have come from somewhere else, surely. Couldn't she rendezvous with the Enterprise elsewhere and brief them as they head for the Klingons to where the Klingons were waking up. So that means the whole A-plot revolved around the idea that there's a very strange way to get the emissary on board, where she briefs them on a bizarre concept of a Klingon sleeper ship, which is apparently attacking colonies they shouldn't, that, you know, they shouldn't stand a chance against anyway. So this is poor in his opinion.
Now I have to say, I kind of agree with everything that has been written so far. And I can only assume, given the tone, is that I was more generous than that in the episode. I think he's right. I think I did mention that I do like the torpedo as a transport vessel, just because it looks cool. I think practically it doesn't make a huge amount of sense. So I think that he's well within his rights to call out, you know, this weird way of sending the ambassador or the emissary across. It was also the case, right, where at the beginning of the show, Picard and everyone could have, you know, easily made preparations and had walked back to the starbase in order to pick her up, because there was no need for them to be so secretive about the mission. You know, really, why couldn't they send across a coded transmission saying, "Hey, there's a Klingon ship that's, you know, out and about. We have to be very careful. Come and pick up an emissary." A lot of this is kind of style over substance in a way. So I don't think it was particularly well thought through. But, you know, the idea of them having to be secretive is a cool concept. And the idea of having this guy travel by torpedo is a cool concept. And the idea of the 75-year-old sleeper ship might be a cool concept. But when you add this up, it just doesn't really make sense. So I kind of, long story short, I agree with Kieran.
Okay. Well, I kind of agree with what he says next, but I don't. Dr. Salar and Worf, really? I don't like Salar as a character, and what little we saw of her, that is. So I'm glad we got Kalar, as she was much better a character. I agree with that. Admittedly, they might have been because Susie Plaxton looked better as a Klingon than a Vulcan. The Worf-Salar thing, I think the reason why I would have liked to have seen that is because of how ridiculous it sounds. And just like, you know, we flash forward it and we have Quark, and I can't think of her name, but she's another Klingon who he pretty much has fallen for. And that was because he accidentally killed her husband. So that didn't sound right either to me. So I don't know. I just would like to have seen how it would have possibly been done. I think it'd have been funny. That's all.
I have the problem that I have isn't that, you know, Worf with another, you know, a Klingon with another alien, whether it's a Romulan or a Ferengi or whoever. I think that often always works, and I think the odd couple thing is fine. I think the Vulcans are special, and I think the Vulcans are special because they are supposed to be logical, and they're supposed to have, you know, there's a certain thing behind them that isn't just, they're not overcome by lust, or, you know, only every 7 years perhaps they are. So that's my objection mainly to Dr. Salar and Worf is to do with, I wouldn't know how to explain it logically that would ever be a good idea.
No, it wouldn't be a good idea, but it'd been fun to see how they tried. I mean, the logical Vulcan and a completely illogical Klingon. I don't know. I think it'd been interesting. Although, you know, Worf isn't exactly 100% Klingon either, so there have been chances. He goes on to say the B-plot of this episode was a lot better. And we're still talking about the emissary, that is. Gotta remind you, what are they talking about? Although, are all Klingons expected to get married as soon as they mate? I guess that would be honorable. I suppose it would be the honorable thing to do. That's what he says. But you still have to wonder if Klingons don't have sex for fun. Maybe that's an older expectation among Klingons. It's always hard to tell with Worf. But isn't Worf the one that says he doesn't need that in his life?
He does. This is during the Hide and Cue, right? In the first season.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't need that in my life. Whatever. I mean, you know, obviously he changed his mind when he met Jadzia Dax. I would have. As for the actual mechanics of Klingon mating, yes, I think they cut away. It's not the first time that's happened in Star Trek. Remember the search for Spock? It's called Ponfar.
Now, okay, let me... What do you... In Search for Spock, is there an assumption that they cut away whilst young Spock and Savick get it on? because I've never assumed that that has to be the case. But
I never thought that either.
But I have heard people suggest that it must have happened. And the idea of, you know, what Kieran's bringing up here is, as the young adolescent Spock goes through Ponfar on the planet, suggests that to be true. Yeah. And it's really unfortunate the next sentence is a quick bigger finger action later.
Yeah. Yeah, what do you mean by that, Kieran? Finger action. Oh, okay, no. They just slide down each other's fingers. Ooh. Okay, well, I'm assuming they cut away. That wasn't enough for touch telepath, was it? I wouldn't have thought so. You know about the non-canon storyline that Savick stayed on Vulcan in the voyage home because she was pregnant with Spock's child, right? No, I don't. I don't go for the books and the non-canon stories. As for the holodeck programs, again, I agree with Brian that they're being public and private holodeck programs. Of course, you still need to be careful when actually running them, as we discover later with Barclay. That's pretty much anyone can walk in without asking. And as Geordi later finds out, you also want to be careful what you leave set as public. It might be misconstrued and taken out of context, because every time you touch the engines, Geordi, you're touching her. Right. Oops. I can't really rate this as high as you guys did. The whole A-plot premise is badly flawed, and only the story between Kalar and Worf is actually good. A better story to get her on the ship would have been far better. A renegade Klingon ship might have been enough to keep the majority of the story intact, but it's too convoluted for my liking as such, and I'm giving this a 2 out of 5. One thing I do want to say, that I feel the opposite as Kieran does, because I think had we, like I said, if we had the cat and mouse game of finding this Klingon ship as it was destroying outposts, and you know, we're trying to find them as we're going past ships that are limping back home because they got their nose beaten out of by the Klingons, I think that would have been a better story, and we could have skipped the whole Kalar Worf were lovers at one time and don't like each other and now they do thing. Okay, and finally, Office Space is brilliant. I'm going to go ahead and recommend that movie just as soon as finish these TPS reports. Yeah, he has some TPS reports, and there to be some problems. And remember, you have to ship the TPS reports out with the programs. If you don't do that, you'll have 17 different people reminding you that you should send the TPS report out. But if you've, again, I'm going to say it again. If you've never seen Office Space, you must see Office Space. I mean, everything from start, it starts out with three guys in traffic, and the juxtaposition of each guy as one is just, he can't believe he's looking at this old man that's walking with a walker, and that guy's already down the street, and he's still stuck in traffic. Then you go flash to a second guy, and you get this white guy in a skinny tie who's jamming out to hardcore gangster rap. It's called No Tears by Scarface. That should tell you something right there alone. James is now going, what the hell is that?
No, I've seen Office Space.
You've seen, okay, yeah. So you've got that, and then you got the third guy who's just completely freaking out, you know. I don't know if it's Arabic or what he's trying to say. And then we go to the fourth character of Milton sitting at the bus stop saying, the mumbling to him, blah, blah, blah. I was told next time I'm there, I'll be summarily dismissed. And it just goes on from there. It's a hilarious movie, and you must see it. Thank you, Kieran. I know I started your post about 20 minutes ago, so I apologize for that.
Okay, then let's move on to Captain Proton, Ben. And he posts, to me, the best part of this episode is the foreshadowing at the poker table. Mm. And this I didn't see or recognize at the time, so I'm being stupid there. Klingons never bluff. And how do we solve the problem? We issue a bluff. Mm. Brian was onto something at the end. The Klingon captain of the sleeper ship was bluffing at the final confrontation, but Turn Iceman holds firm. Confirmation that Worf has learned a lot about who a Klingon is. Excellent and subtle execution of character development. 5 stars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Queen Cat Blue would be next, wouldn't she?
She is.
Okay. Dr. Szilard Worf. Could have been possible for one time, right? If she was affected by Pon Farr, maybe. Oh, that's an interesting point. Maybe she would have wanted someone who could withstand her Vulcan strength. What about Wesley? Oh, no, he'd have been done too quickly. Anyway, look at Vorak wanting to mate with B'Elanna. I like the Kalar Worf relationship aspect because it gives us something interesting about Worf's life before posting on the Enterprise. And because they did something with it, continuity, I've always liked Kalar as a character and such as a foil for Worf. Good point. Oh, by the way, regarding Brian's comment about not wanting to be Worf's next wife, in Star Trek books, one of the authors, David Mack, has Worf as Picard's first officer in a relationship with the chief of security, Jasminder Chowdhury.
Yeah, that's okay. Right.
Not a clue. Guess what happens to Jasminder in one of the books? Yep, she dies. Who wants to be Worf's next girlfriend or wife? Not me. But anyway, she gives the episode a 3.5, but gives a podcast a 5.
Oh, that's very kind. And just Captain Proton finishes up by saying, backstory plus continuity equals awesome. Alone they fail. Compliment what they rock. Good call, Cena.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, they were good on that. Oh, boy. Have anybody seen Peak for Performance review or forum feedback? If not, really, check it out. Kieran has a very long one that if we were to read, I'm not sure we'd still be around. What do you think, Doc? You want to do it?
Sorry, I thought that... Hang on. I don't know if we're on or offline at the moment, but don't we have Peak Performance scheduled for Season 3?
Oh, yeah. Season 3 Evolution has number 21. Yes, it is. You're right. You're right. So I guess we have a little more time. So let's take that all out.
Because one thing we haven't done, by the way, is you put a forum posting of what is your best and worst of TNG season 2.
Yeah.
And we have three people that have kind of added their thoughts.
Yeah. All right, guys. So we do have a couple more for season 2, but we're going to give them a little more chance to expand. Hopefully we get a little more forum feedback for Peak Performance and Shades of Grey. But one thing I do want to mention is I did put out a post for this episode, says what is your best and worst of TNG season 2, and guess who starts off? You can read that one.
Oh, is it Kieran McDuff?
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. Okay, apparently I enjoyed season 2 more than season 1. I went back and did some research on my own scores that I posted on here, as well as doing a bit of retcon to score the earlier season 1 episodes, not of all of which I commented about on here. Are you sure? I'm sure you must have done. Yep, imagine it without having to read one of my feedbacks. Genesis Cave Paradise-like dream sequence goes here. According to Kerry McDuff, his average of season 2 comes out as a 3.3, and that's up on the season 1 average, which is a 2.68. And he says that there were 4 episodes which got top marks in season 2. Those were The Child, Elementary Dear Data, The Measure of a Man, and Q Who. That on top of season 1, where there are only 3, and that was Where No One Has Gone Before. Good to have someone backing me up on that. The Arsenal of Freedom, which is also a great episode, and Conspiracy. 2 episodes got bottom marks, The Dauphin and Shades of Grey. And I think I'm with him on The Dauphin there.
Yeah.
That's the same as season 1, where Code of Honor and Lonely Among Us were given the lonely 1 out of 5. Mm-hmm. Looking at the scores overall, I think the key improvement is that there's less 2s, 6 in season 1, but 6 in season 2, but 13 in season 1, and more 4s, 7 in season 2, and 3 in season 1. Looking forward to see how I score season 3. And I have to say, I mean, speaking about looking forward to season 3, I think there are at least 5 episodes that are a full 5 out of 5 from me in season 3. I think it's going to be, I'm going to be gushing week after week.
Yeah.
Returning to Kieran McDuff's post. Okay, time for Season 2 awards. The best episode goes to The Measure of a Man. Such a terrific episode, examining some excellent issues. And it was so good that even my wife enjoyed it. Which we kept watching after that, but she's got out, because she's got out of the habit now, unfortunately. The worst episode goes to Shades of Grey. 15 minutes of reasonable storyline does not make a good episode. But at least there were mitigating circumstances to explain why this episode exists. The best storyline goes to the introduction of the Borg. Truly scary stuff. They will be coming is such a brilliant, ominous warning. The worst storyline goes to the colony of the 19th century Iris folks. It's bizarre that they exist like that. But not only that it focuses on odd stereotype and probably somewhat insulting, if not racist. The best main character for me goes to Guinan. Bit of a stretch calling her a main character, but Pulaski was a special guest star throughout the season, so I'm claiming this counts. She was a terrific introduction to the cast and gave a good few insights to the crew. None more so than Picard realizing the slavery argument in Data's case. And I have to echo that. I mentioned earlier that I was also a big fan of Guinan's introduction and certainly her relationship with Picard has been very good.
Hey, one thing I do want to mention that now that he says none more the insights, none more than Picard realizing the slavery argument in Data's case. But, I mean, she goes on to say, oh, I think that's a little harsh. Do you think maybe she actually does agree that this is kind of like slavery? Or, as she says, no, that's a little harsh.
Okay, that's a good question. I think that she does recognize that it is that there are those parallels. I think that when Picard was speaking to her, she was guiding him along a thought process, and I think that when she replies with, oh, you know, that's a little harsh, I still think that she's trying to guide him. So I think that she's just probably making sure that he's got this argument clear in his mind, and he didn't just come out of with slavery as hyperbole. So I think she agrees, and I think she's just testing that he's on a firm footing there, is how I read it.
Okay. Whereas, was she, I'm trying to remember, was Whoopi Goldberg in, she was in The Color Purple, I believe.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
I don't think she was in Roots that I know of, or that I remember. But the reason why I say maybe she actually meant it, because if... Really, I don't think Data being examined as part of an experiment to see if he can be recreated counts to me as true slavery in the strictest sense of the word. I mean, obviously, he wasn't forced to do manual labor or beat, or, you know, his sister wasn't raped. I mean, when it comes to real slavery, I think that was a little harsh. I could see Picard's point, but in the strictest sense of what slavery really means, no, I think he was wrong in that word. But if they could have come up with a better word that would be more suitable, I can see that.
No, I think the argument that Picard was making was not necessarily in terms of slavery and what happens in the here and now, but in terms of projecting into the future, where you would have, if you were to have several million Datas, and their rights as for want of a better word, people were not recognized, you would have this situation where you would have effectively a two-tier system where there would be biological beings and mechanical beings that would be for intents and purposes equivalent, whether it's through their consciousness, whether it's through their sentience or not, but they would be treated differently because of, well, one of them would be mechanical, one of them would be biological. And I think it was more along, if we look at into the future where that could be true, and that doesn't necessarily mean that you have to accept at the moment that Data has conscience or Data has sentience in the same way a human does. But I think it was more of a warning that if you remove these, well, it was basically throwing out the question is, what is the difference? What makes Data different from a biological person? And if you don't get that very clear, you can very see where this goes in the future. If you were to have a lot more of these people and they were more and more sophisticated and more for a better word, you know, human like.
And you see, and I think we really could get a good debate going on this, because then I'm thinking, actually, if you think about what Guinan was saying, you know, build a whole army full of Datas, all very disposable. One could say that that's what happens to what we now call automobiles. We have a whole fleet of automobiles that take us where we need to go. They do our bidding for us, and then when we're careless, we crash them and destroy them. The only thing that's different between Data and my Kia is that Data has a face, that has eyes, and can talk. Beyond that, he's just a piece of technology, so I almost don't see how slavery, again, is the right word, because Data is programmed to not feel pain. So if Data refuses to work and they beat him for it, he's not going to feel pain. In the end, he'll come out ahead. You know, that's why I'm saying that we could debate this for a long time. So
yes, no, we can. So I'll get back then.
Oh yeah.
The worst main character of the season has to go to Deanna Troi. Did she actually do anything this season other than accidentally get pregnant? She has better seasons. Now I have to say she was good in Loud as a Whisper, and I've been a bit of an apologist for Troi, and what I think I will do one day is actually come up with a big proper thesis as to why Troi is a good character, because I realize at the moment I'm just saying that I think she's okay, but I'm not providing a huge amount of evidence. But anyway, I take Kieran's point on board. Best one-time character goes to Q. He's only in this season once, but what an appearance. He knocks Picard down several pegs in Q-Who, something they clearly needed doing. Worst one-time character goes to future Jean-Luc Picard from Times Squared. Actually, yeah, that's a pretty good call. He just stayed there wearing way too much makeup, and then current Jean-Luc shot him because he was being overly weird. Best technology from season 2? The Iconian portal was pretty cool.
Oh yeah.
Why didn't we think of that at the beginning?
There's another thing that I need to correct myself on now that you read this. Go on.
Like a transporter, but even more impressive and instant. I wish they'd made more of that idea that the Iconians just popped up in places. Did no one ever find one of these portals in a former Iconian Empire world? I'm pretty sure that there are books that cover this, actually. And also, this comes up later in DS9 as well, in a pretty good episode.
Bloody episode.
Huh?
A much bloody episode.
Is it?
Oh, God, yes. The Jem'Hadar is guarding this Iconian thing. Yeah.
And finally, worst technology. I was going to say that it was the pointless stripped-out torpedo that Kadar showed up in, but then I remembered that Ira Graves' coffin with a window. So what? We made the point that it looked like the Ira Graves' coffin to begin with, didn't we?
Yes. Yeah, it was just a different color.
I don't know if that counts as technology, but I suppose, you know, if you have a coffin and if you have a window and then you combine them, then yes, I suppose it's technology.
It'd have been interesting if Ira Graves' torpedo ends up in the Delta Quadrant and that race of people that find the dead and reintegrate them. That'd have been an interesting thing. But you know something, Kieran, you actually brought up an interesting point, and that was Q. I didn't even mention John DeLancey as Q in Q-Who, so that was my fault. And because of that, actually, Susie is now taking a backseat to John DeLancey as Q. I think Q was the focal point of this season because of what he did and what he did to the Enterprise. And because of that, we have, you know, we talk about the Borg is in the Emissary in DS9, and it's a staple in Voyager. And even though it shouldn't be there, it is an Enterprise. So if it wasn't for Q sending us to the Delta Quadrant, then the Borg wouldn't be as big. So yes, this year, best one-time character does go to Q. Thank you. Thank you. Get it? Thank you. Anyway.
Boom, boom.
Medic 1849 Blair, who celebrates Boxing Day, says, I have always liked this season.
I'm going to have to Google that while you're doing this.
Yeah, go ahead. I've heard your keyboard doing a... for most of our shows. I've always liked season 2 as it was my introduction into TNG. So, in no particular order, best of season 2, LaForge's promotion and appointment to chief engineer. Worf's appointment to chief security. O'Brien gets a name. Yay! Unfortunately, later he gets a wife. Intro to Guinan. Intro of Guinan. Intro to 10 Ford. Riker's beard. Why isn't that number 1? Oh, he did say no particular order, so okay. New uniform for Wesley. The Borg. Exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point. Notable episodes. Elementary Dear Data. Measure of a Man. The Royale. Times Squared and Q-Who. Worst of Season 2. Dr. Pulaski and the attempts of the writers to make Pulaski like McCoy.
That is... very true, and we called that out, or at least I called that out. She's no McCoy.
No, and when they jettisoned her attempt to be McCoy, she started to get better.
Actually, I think that's true.
Yeah.
I think that's true.
And then other worst of season 2, he says, Data's beard. Yes, it was the anti-Will of beards. Worst of season 2 again, coffins and torpedoes like shuttle pods. Notable episodes... The Outrageous Akana, Schizoid Man, and Shades of Grey. Those were the worst of season 2. Keep up the great work. I'm looking forward to season 3. And Captain Proton goes on to say, best of season 2. Is he serious with Pulaski?
I think he's trolling. But last time I accused Ben of trolling, he then replied saying, I'm not trolling.
So, I don't know. I think he's playing with us. Worst of season, because I don't see that right. Worst of season 2, Geordi. Again, I don't think so. Best of season 2, the fact that it's over. There. Worst of season 2, the lack of discussable materials and Shades of Grey. Best of season 2, listening to James Doc Roberts. Of course. Yeah, he'd have to mention that.
He's clearly trolling.
Definitely. Because where am I? I don't see. Oh, and Lou too. So he'll have to log in to, Ben, log into the worst or best of TNG season 2 and edit that to say, oh, and Lou 2. And the worst of season 2, watching it. All right, guys, thank you so much for your input. So, a couple other things, I guess.
Actually, could I bring us down slightly?
Don't bring me down. Whatever that next word is, go ahead.
So, actually, it's something that I'd like to say, and it didn't really work out when the event happened, kind of earlier, a month ago or so, because I think, we're obviously often recorded out of schedule and so on, and I think it's probably a good place to mention it here. We obviously lost Leonard Nimoy earlier this year. Mm-hmm. Which was, really unfortunate. But around the same time, we actually lost another two kind of big guys in Trek. It was something crazy. It was like within about a window of a week or so. And one person we did lose, we lost Maurice Hurley, who was pretty much the executive producer and the guide and the showrunner throughout season 2 of TNG. And I think that he leaves at the end of season 2 and he makes way for Michael Piller, who comes on in season 3. And I think a lot of credit goes to Michael Piller to taking Star Trek to the next level and, shifting us out of the first two seasons kind of a rut. But I have to say, I think that with what has been mentioned so far about how I believe that there has been a significant improvement in quality in season 2, in particular on the writing side, and that added to the fact that, Maurice himself wrote episodes like Q-Who in season 2. I think that, I just want to put it out there that I think his contribution to Trek was, pretty substantial. And he only passed very close to when Leonard Nimoy passed. He was obviously also an older gentleman. And I think it's worthwhile just taking a moment to say thanks. And I think season 2 worked out pretty well under his stewardship.
Right. And the other person?
Oh, I'm afraid. Also, we lost the we lost the producers of the of the of the Star Trek Motion Pictures as well. Harve Bennett, of course. Harve also, a very, that doesn't get as much credit as he probably should. He came on board with Nicholas Meyer for Star Trek II, and he kind of worked, he came on board with Star Trek II. He was the gentleman that, when you hear the stories in Star Trek II about someone going back and watching all 80 original series episodes and then finding the Khan thread and saying, yeah, we should revisit this. That was Harve Bennett. Mm-hmm. He stayed around for the, for what I think is the real, the movie series from 2, through to 6. And I know that Star Trek 5 gets bad rap, but I think that, 2, 3, 4, that great film, Star Trek 6, is outstanding as well. So he also unfortunately passed at the age of, 85, 86, 84, earlier on this year. And again, it was within a very short time period of him and Leonard Nimoy and Maurice Hardy all going, which was very sad.
We also lost Grace Lee Whitney, who was Janice Rand.
Very recently, yeah.
So that all occurred in season 2.
Yeah.
And of course, if Spock were still around, or Leonard Nimoy, he would say,
live long and prosper.
That's right. So, okay. I want to thank everybody for, downloading the show. Normally, I don't discuss this, but we have increased our downloads. I've sent a couple to you. Usually, we're averaging a little over 2,500 to 300. Pin Pals, unfortunately, got slaughtered. But in the end, the second version of Pin Pals 2 ended up over 400 downloads. And as I go down, others are down about 400. The Measure of a Man went well over 600. 761 for Contagion. So we seem to be picking up some steam. And compared to my numbers on the Lou Trek Show, you have no idea how this pleases me, to be over 700 downloads. That means at least 47 are actually listening to us. I'm kidding. So unless there's 600 and some robots downloading our show, people are liking what they're hearing, and I appreciate this very much. Again, there's really not much going on with us. My daughter started her softball season. So we have a game in 2 hours that I'll be going to. That is, if it doesn't rain. Work is still going good. I'm still, catching shoplifters, and it's a lot of fun. How about you, Doc?
Things are fine. Actually, something came up on our post episode review kind of discussion that then you were unaware of, but. In about 5 weeks' time, I'm welcoming if everything goes well, the family will be welcoming another little baby into the house. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be something to look forward to in the coming weeks. Now, I think I've mentioned on the show that I do have a bucket load of kids, and I should probably be a bit more accurate. We currently have 4 kids, so my eldest is 11, and I've got an elder daughter, 2 brothers in between at 6 and 8, and we've got a little baby that's 3 currently, who's a little girl. And if everything goes well, in mid-June we'll be having another little baby girl into the house. And I know that this is a large number of kids for any person to have, so don't shout us down, but that's what we're currently very busy on, and making sure everything, my wife is able to deliver, and everyone has a happy little baby come along. So that's what I'm going to be busy doing.
Cool.
In addition to work and other stuff, like making sure there's nothing wrong on the internet.
Well, congratulations, Doc. That's great. So really, by the time we start season 3, you will have had her. So I expect a full report on little baby. Have you named her, or are you going to have a naming ceremony?
We'll have a naming ceremony.
Something that sounds so goofy, but it is cute. You realize, if you think about it, Inner Light has a really interesting premise of gathering your friends and family and then saying, I present to you, you know, Batai, or whatever her name will be. It won't be Batai. But still, you know, it's a very sweet idea. But I don't think it would work in our society. I don't know about yours, but yeah. You know, what's her name? Well, we're not going to tell anybody for a while. We'll let you know. So, all right. Season 3. Guys, we're going to take a break, but you'll understand before we get to Season 3 why we need this space. You'll understand, believe me. But I've scheduled Season 3 to start recording on July 11th, gets us past Independence, for the U.S., that is. I'm sorry, guys.
From who did you want to become independent, Lou?
I don't know. But, you know, if you want to try to, you know, set up a revolt, I'm sure the Queen could take us back if she really, really won't put her head to it. But, no. We're gonna go ahead and start on July 11th, and of course it will go out probably the week after there. So expect to hear us again on July, 18th or so. But again, like I said, you'll understand what we've got going on here very shortly. And that's pretty much it. I guess that's all I can think of. What about you, Doctor?
I don't think I have a huge amount to add, I'm afraid.
Okay.
Other than the fact that we always look forward to people joining the show. I think that towards the tail end of Season 2, I think perhaps even from the midpoint of Season 2, we pretty much had a guest on every single episode, and that is always welcome. If there's anyone out there that would like to come on, and you know, as Lou mentioned, please let us know. We would be extremely happy to get, you know, new people come on as well, people that haven't been on before. Yeah, this kind of thing is, this we would very much welcome, you know, lots of feedback from people that haven't got in touch so far, or and that. So,
Yeah, that's true. I mean, in Season 1, we had 9 guests come on. Season 2, we had 15. And Season 3, we're scheduled for 18. And I got a feeling, now that we've put out this message, that somebody's going to want these 8 episodes. And so you don't have to go back and find out what those were. I'll give them to you again. The Survivors, The Price, The Vengeance Factor, A Matter of Perspective, Captain's Holiday, Hollow Pursuits, and Menage a Trois. There's our Ferengi episode for the season. Menage a Trois. Of those, as I look down, I won't say what, but I expect I will have some pretty good 5s coming on. I'm seeing 1, 2, 3, 4, maybe 5. So, like you said, I can spot 5 that are going to be 5s. One in particular I'm absolutely looking forward to, and I get to introduce it as well. So,
actually, something that I've been carrying in my mind, in addition to giving you like the rating of the episode, I'm also carrying with me what is my favorite episode so far. And I mentioned this when we reviewed it, which currently my favorite episode so far was Where No One Has Gone Before, in back in Season 1. And it stayed like that for a very long time. But in Season 3, it changes. It changes 3 times.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I can't wait to hear that.
There are some very good ones, and there are some very good ones almost back to back to back to back. So you'll see my, you know, favorite episode so far of the season, of the series, right from the beginning of the Season 1, is going, you know, I think we're going to see Where No One Has Gone Before pushed down to like number 4 or so, something like that.
Okay. Back to back to back. I'm already looking, and I think I figured it out. I'm going to highlight those 3 with some yellow highlight to see if I'm right. Okay,
I did take almost back to back to back, but anyway, yes.
Yeah, but you didn't say that. You said back to back. So, okay. And that brings us to the end, guys. This has been a terrific season. I think Season 3 is going to be even better. I expect our average to go from 3.09 and 3.23. I expect those to probably get very, very close to 4 So that's quite a leap. But from what I'm seeing, I think it could be done.
Next time on Star Trek, The Next Generation.
Controls are not responding, sir.
Something evil is threatening the Enterprise.
Nitrogen oxide, toxic levels.
Lives are in danger.
Stay straight into the path of that stellar matter.
Disaster is dead ahead.
Prepare for impact.
On Star Trek, The Next Generation.
All right, so join us next time as we review Season 3, Episode 1, Evolution. I'm sorry, guys. I know we made it sound like Season 3 would be best, but let's get past a couple, and then we're going to be wonderful. And our guest will be Colin for that. So take care, and good night, guys.
Okay, good night, everyone.
All right.
There's nothing wrong with Evolution.
What do you mean the number of Evolution?
There's nothing wrong with Evolution at all.
That's Dr. Nothing... Stubbs, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
You're right. I do like his baseball thing.
And by the way, that's exactly when Michael Piller comes on. He comes on, he brings in Evolution, he begins starting going on about baseball.